Not all meals are created equal. For instance, breakfast has the spicy egg McMuffin for a limited time, and lunch doesn't. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Ukraine conflict. I welcome Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army retired CBS News Dickinson College, the CEO of Diamond Six Leadership and Strategy, to comment on what we know and what we can suppose from the news coming out of Ukraine battle space of the word counteroffensive. That is a term of art that the military understands specifically for logistics and for ambition. Jeff, a very good evening to you. Counteroffensive, we've heard this name, this word, for some days. What does it mean for Ukraine to say they're going to or they are launching a counteroffensive, either in the north or the south, somewhere on the flanks? What does that mean we should watch for in these coming days? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, John. Well, I think we ought to watch particularly is the air in the south. This seems to be the focal point for this Ukrainian counteroffensive, particularly against the city of Kherson, just north of Crimea, which was occupied by the Russians back in 2014. Kherson was the first city of any size to fall the Russian forces. And since March, you know, the key areas around that have been a beachhead as the Russians tried to move farther westward towards Odessa. But now we see the Ukrainians mounting forces to take that particular city back. And they've tried to isolate the Russian forces on the west bank of the Dnipro River using the long-range fires now provided in large measure by the acquisition of HIMARS, and other multiple rocket systems they have gotten from other NATO countries. This has allowed them to take out the bridges, also has allowed them to take out a lot of the ammunition storage facilities and ability for the Russians to move forces forward to reinforce that particular area. And as we see the fighting now slowing in the Donbas region around Donetsk, around Slovyansk and other places, it seems clear the Russians are trying to reposition forces from the Donbas in the southeast to meet this mounting Ukrainian counteroffensive to retake that particular territory.
Counteroffensives put a great burden on the leadership. To your understanding, the leadership of Ukraine is very difficult to see. We hear a lot about the weapon systems, a lot about resupply, and a lot about the president. Does it require a different kind of commander for a defensive operation than a counteroffensive operation?
Yeah, I think it certainly does, John, because what it has to do is you have to be able to react quickly and show initiative as the battle conditions change. You want to maintain your momentum and you want your opponent reacting to you rather than the other way around. And as a consequence, it calls for decentralization. And to some degree, it seems across the board, the Ukrainians have done far better in that regard than the Russians have, who have been very centralized in their command and control. The second thing which a counteroffensive requires, of course, is your ability to reposition forces and your ability to reposition logistics. And this is why the fatal inability, and I call it fatal inability, for the Russians to achieve any degree of air supremacy over or air superiority over the battlefield has been so critically important. You know, in 1990 and 91, John, during the Gulf War, we were able to do that quickly against the Iraqis, which meant their ability to move forces as they saw us making the big left hook with the 7th U.S. Corps was impossible because if it moved, it died. But in this case, the Russians have not been able to achieve air superiority of the battlefield, and therefore the Ukrainians are able to combine that decentralized command and control with their ability to still move forces to mount this counteroffensive.
It was a very busy week in terms of war fighting. The death of the leader of Al-Qaeda, Zawahiri, in Kabul, we're told enough to understand that it was done with a drone and a Hellfire missile at a balcony to minimize civilian casualties in the middle of what used to be Embassy Row. What did you learn about our capabilities from this event, Jeff?
Well, a couple of things. One is we still maintain some degree of intelligence assets in Afghanistan. We're able to locate where he was, monitor this particular safe house, and monitor his activities. He made a fatal error, and that is he started to show a routine presence on this particular balcony. And that's the one thing anybody in his position should not do. The second thing it told us was our ability to do these kind of precise strikes has dramatically improved. The two Hellfires that were fired didn't even damaged the structural integrity of the building, and we're told by all accounts took out him alone and not killed anyone else in the building, which included his family members. These are hellfires that don't depend on explosions so much as, if you will, sort of spinning blades that actually kill the target. And that's what occurred in the case of Ayman Zawahiri. And finally, that we were able to confirm his particular death either through very close intelligence or finally, of course, the confirmation provided by the Taliban that he had been in the city, he had been in the house, and he was, in fact, dead.
And we can look at this as a model going forward. I know that drones and drone activity have been used for many years. Is this a new sophistication to your understanding?
No, I think it's just an evolution of that sophistication, John. And of course, with the withdrawal from Afghanistan by the Biden administration last September, the president promised that we would maintain an over-the-horizon presence in our counterterrorism operations. And this is a demonstration of that. But your success in doing that over-horizon effort is only able, I think, to be looked at in the rearview mirror after you've actually done it. It doesn't necessarily mean you can do it always. It doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be perfect at it. But it certainly demonstrates that we have, since, of course, the beginning of this conflict now 20 years ago, developed a very vast intelligence effort that brings together signal intelligence, satellite intelligence, photographic intelligence, and human intelligence to be very precise about locating targets, and then the weaponry, such as these drones and Hellfire, that can engage in a surgical manner.
We go from Ukraine to Afghanistan to East Asia. Within these hours, Jeff, this headline from Europe: China suspends links with U.S. military over Pelosi's trip to Taiwan. The explanation: China has suspended regular communication channels with the U.S. military, as well as climate talks between the two largest economies, in retaliation for U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's visit. What does that mean, regular communications? Is that the term mill to mill, and what does it accomplish?
Well, it certainly is concerns mill to mill, but it also may be worrisome in terms of the so-called hotline that is maintained between the United States and the Chinese, and as well as with the United States and the Russians. The hotline is that device whereby we can communicate if there is a crisis, two ships collide, a plane goes in the wrong direction, a missile goes somewhere else, to preclude escalation. If they have, in fact, closed down for a period of time the hotline, that is therefore worrisome. Second thing it underscores, John, I think, is that we actually, whether we like it or not, need the Chinese for a number of different crises and potential crises around the globe. Clearly, the Chinese have been very outspoken in supporting the Russians in the war in Ukraine. But to the best of my knowledge, I've seen no evidence of the Chinese transferring large-scale military equipment or supplies to the Russian, despite their rhetoric. That's important. That continues. Second of all, we're trying a last-ditch effort to close up or complete, once again, a reactivation of the JCPOA, the Iran nuclear deal. And the Chinese are part and parcel of those negotiations. We certainly need them to work with us if that's going to be successful. And then, of course, always lurking in the hinder is good old Kim Jong-un in North Korea, who has done some missile testing and has threatened to do a nuclear test. Any progress in dampening down a potential crisis on the Korean Peninsula cannot occur without cooperation from the Chinese.
68 Chinese military aircraft, 13 warships, and we're told missiles fired over Taiwan or near Taiwan. It sounds like a tantrum of rage. I don't see this as a strike ability. Is it is that like fireworks for the military? We have about 30 seconds, Jeff.
No, I think it does two things, John. One, it shows how they've been firing it into different zones, how they can isolate Taiwan if they needed to for an invasion and preclude us from moving vast naval forces in the area. Second, they fired 5 missiles that actually landed in Japanese territorial waters, sending a message, I think, clearly to Tokyo that if there was a conflict with Taiwan, Tokyo could not stay out of it, and those American bases that are on Japanese territory would be vulnerable to a Chinese strike.
Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army retired, CBS News. I'm John Bash.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.